Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok.
And we are here for a very special episode. We are going to talk about the first live-action Star Wars television show. It is episode one of The Mandalorian Report.
Dun, 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 dun. I got to get some news cues for that.
Breaking news. The Mandalorian is here.
That's a great win with that name, sir.
Yeah, yeah. I'm so excited to be able to dig into this. There's obviously the staggered release of The Mandalorian. It's here in the United States. It is not in places like most of Europe.
Yeah.
So it's nice for us to be able to do these separate episodes where we can dive in and then have the main show. We'll keep kind of building up to Rise of Skywalker. In these episodes, we can just dig right into each individual episode of Mandalorian.
What I love is it's like United States and Netherlands.
Yeah.
And I think our listener, our friend Mark Canope, we have fun saying his name wrong on purpose. Eventually, he'll hate us for that. Mark had a sneak preview of it, so he gets to experience it here. Even before we did, not Mandalorian, but the app itself. What I loved is at one point last night during the chaos, my friend Billy Patterson, yeah. Four Center guest, Screen Junkies producer, texts me. We're like, where's it up? Is it up here? Is it up there? And he goes, if you set your Xbox to the Netherlands region, you'll get it. And I was like, I have neither the Xbox nor the time to set my PS4 to Netherlands. So
lock your S files into a tight position. Yeah. Set your Xbox to Netherlands.
It was fun, though, to see it pop up. I saw listener Will McLean, who is a Schmodan fan, lives in Houston.
Nice.
I've met him, and I believe listens to Force Center and a lot of things. He was in my Discord server, and he just typed the words, it's on Roku.
Nice.
And I went, Grace, God love you. I love you more than I ever had before. You have a Roku. Let's fire it up. And that worked.
Yeah. Sarah was actually already in bed, my wife, Sarah, because I had thought, it's not happening.
Not happening.
And then you texted, like, no, I got it. And I was like, Sarah, wake up. Get out here. It's time to watch Star Wars and Grizzled Weirdos. Nick Nolte is an Ugnaught. Get in the living room now.
She's already just one of the best partners in the history of the world. I know how the way she supports you on all your Star Wars endeavors and loves Star Wars herself.
Yeah.
Man, that's a great win if she's like, all right, I'll get back up out of bed.
She had to pause in her reading of the Rogue One novelization that she's reading right
awesome.
Now.
Awesome. Yeah. See, there you go.
Anyway, this could be the partner report, but this is going to be the Mandalorian report. My partner, Sarah, my wife, enjoyed it very much. So we'll probably end up talking about Mandalorian a couple places in particular. You are leading Collider Jedi yeah. Council. I've been kindly asked to pop in on a couple Mandalorian conversations. The future's always in motion. Who knows how many? But this is going to be our Force Center look.
Yeah.
Kind of tried to break it down into some of the deep dives that you and I like to do and Jennifer likes to do when she can be here. And also just some of the fun moments, some of the action figure-y moments, some of the grizzled weirdo moments, and really want to celebrate like the depth of what is this about, the surface of the cool fights, and then just the weird, fun, playful spirit of Star Wars.
It was chock full of all of it, and I can't. A few times during it, I just was like, "This is happening.
Yeah,
this is on my TV." And it's not just the 2 year so wait for Mandalorian, but 2005 of they're going to do a live action series, and just, you know, growing up and thinking, how do I get more Star Wars into my life?
Right. I mean, you go back to that day, and I promise you this whole episode will not be people of the who came of age in the 80s. And remember, but it is a context for this episode because that's where the creators are coming from. That's who they are generationally as well. But, you know, there were those days they're like, so much content I want to see, even if I just want to watch science fiction and fantasy and superheroes, so much content. And back then, like, I hope there's a public service announcement with C-3PO.
Yeah.
That's the only way I'm going to see Star Wars on the screen.
It's like, I hope they're replaying that Muppet show when he and Mark Hamill and R2-D2 showed up.
Yeah. So to get from the dream of that impossibility to a Mandalorian on screen, what was your ritual? Did you have it? Did you do anything to sort of mark the occasion of, like, after all these decades, you're sitting down to watch a Star Wars TV show?
That's a great question, because I'll tell you what, I've always been excited for The Mandalorian. I don't want anyone to think otherwise, but I had a feeling in my head of, like, I wasn't going to be as excited. Rise of Skywalker is still in my big focus, but, hey, I'm looking forward to Kenobi, Cassian Andor, and, I'm looking forward to Mandalorian. It'll be on. And then I was like you. I was working on my baseball column last night, and I was like, we're probably done. Like, it's not happening
tonight.
I started to fire up another motion picture on the TV screen while I was writing, and then that's when I started seeing the stuff about the Roku. And then I got super excited, and Grace, my girlfriend, I was like, it's on, it's happening, get ready. And we turned off the lights, we poured a drink each. I had a set of Death Star ice cubes recently sent to me, first rate Nate, part of a gift package, and cracked them open for the first time.
Nice.
And it did mean something. And it was exciting. And she'll tell you, I was leaning forward.
Yeah.
For the first 5 minutes, just like, okay, much like Force Awakens, like, okay, this is happening.
Is it going to be okay?
Is it going to be okay?
Yeah.
And lean back after the cold open, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's so great. Yeah, I realized that I needed to get myself in the spirit because I love talking about it. But, you know, this week alone, I've reread parts of Resistance Reborn to get it back in my head for the review that's coming. I read all the Poe Dameron comics. My wife's been reading Rebel Rising, so I've been talking that about it. And just like, it's a lot. So I just wanted to get back to that focus of just childlike joy. So I had picked up the Black Series Mandalorian because there isn't the 3 3/4 yet. So I had to go that. And I realized, you know what? I don't often do this, but I'm going to open up that action figure. So, yeah, after you left my apartment yesterday from recording the main show, I opened up my Mandalorian.
I noticed the picture. I was like, he took that out after.
I did. I poured some whiskey and I did a photo shoot with my Mandalorian action figure because I knew just with, you know, the sunset.
Yeah.
Because I just knew playing with the action figure would get me excited. And sure enough, it did. Come around to the Disney Plus is there. It works on my PlayStation 4. And I really wanted to make a thing of it to mark the moment, you know. So I got some more whiskey and got my action figure. Had the, you know, like, the symbol of childhood and the symbol of adulthood. Sarah said, I want to take a picture of you. so she did. So it was really in a good place to be like, yeah, I get to talk about this. I get to celebrate this. Yeah. But I also just get to experience this as a fan.
Yeah.
You know,
no matter what it was, you know, no matter what was coming down the pike, it was like, this is some a long time coming.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I figured and then I stayed up late just playing with Disney Plus, seeing what else was there, adding things to my wish list, all that. And then trying to figure out which Simpsons episode did X happen in, flipping through all those, and figured I'll watch The Mandalorian again in the morning. And then when I got up, there were all the problems. And I got one failure screen that a lot of people got that had, like, I think Mickey in space with Pluto on a leash. Like, here.
Don't rub it in.
I know you can't watch The Mandalorian, but here's Mickey. Here's Mickey. Holding another sentient being on a leash in space. Okay. all right. And then there was one that really, I'm going to paraphrase, but I tweeted it. It was like, the content you're requesting is not available to you. And it just felt like this emotionally distant, like, I'm not open to what you're trying to have access now. Yeah, but it did eventually play for me, so I did get to watch it twice. So.
I did watch it a second time in the morning with no issues on my Apple, on my phone, on the Disney Plus on there, which,
okay.
So I saw, because Mark Riley, as I was watching, was texting me going, I guess I'm just not going to watch it today. I can't even see it. And I was like, I didn't want to tell him I'm watching it for the second time with no problems. But so that was, again, we're talking about that because that is definitely part of this experience in this first episode. And Disney Plus holding up at all is a pretty good feat on the first day.
And I saw Disney's response that was basically like, well, look, we expected a lot, but this was even more than we expected. Sorry, we're so awesome. As problems go, it is like, oh, whoops, we forgot to get the rights to blah, blah, blah. It was, you know, it, clearly a lot of people getting up real early in the morning in different parts of the U.S. and the Netherlands.
Yes.
And in other places as well. Anyway, with all that said, getting that picture, we hope everybody listening had a good a ritual, if you like that kind of thing, and had a good first, second, third, fifth viewing experience, however far up you are. But now let's just dig in to the actual show, the first episode of The Mandalorian. So, Ken, walk me through your overall reaction.
Overall reactions is this episode was really, really good. I don't like to give ratings as much anymore. I'm not a critic. We're expert appreciators, right? But I'll say 8 out of 10 for a range.
Yeah.
And that's for the episode. But what I loved is a pilot is supposed to tantalize you. It's supposed to set everything up, right? And from the great pilots of our day, Cheers comes to mind.
Oh, yeah.
Or just episode one of Game of Thrones, where I didn't know that world. I wasn't reading the books when that show launched. And I just immediately was like, got that sense and wanted more. And it's just a great first episode that they famously now got to redo. So this really measured up to those expectations. The episode itself, in rewatching it, I found myself kind of going, all right, yeah. Let's get to some of the bigger things and move on. So that's why, Rick, this isn't a home run. This is like, okay, you did well. You did what a pilot's supposed to do. Filoni did great. Let's get this really going.
Yeah. Okay, I can see that. Great comparison to the setup of the world. Cheers, Frasier, are exceptional pilots. Who knew that we'd be talking about Frasier minutes into our Star Wars podcast? But Game of Thrones in particular, I think is interesting to compare it to Star Wars-wise because that cliffhanger, which don't worry, we will talk about, is really powerful in The Mandalorian of what's next? What does this mean? What's going to happen next because of this? And obviously, the pilot of Game of Thrones is Jaime pushing Bran, right?
Things to do for love. Yep, absolutely.
Yep. And that's really like the, we know the tension. We don't fully understand this world yet.
Yeah.
We don't know all the players, but we know the tension between the Starks and the Lannisters. And right? And and so you have that same, what's going to happen next with The Mandalorian, which I think is really interesting because Star Wars has in its DNA so much episodic storytelling.
Yeah.
And you get that kind of in the chapters of the movie, but like in A New Hope, you more get it from, the stormtroopers are chasing them, but now they're in the trash compactor, but now they have to swing. But can a Millennium Falcon, you get that sort of sense of episodic within one chunk.
Yeah.
This is cool to see like truly episodic of like, wait till the next episode.
Wait till next week.
Cliffhanger, you know? Yeah. So that's a great way to look at the power of it. For me, I think it delivered my expectations and some surprises. I'm always big about contrast in Star Wars. You know, I think it had a sense of the new and the old. Yeah. I think it had a sense of that kind of nostalgia in the past is always present, which I think is an important part of Star Wars because The Mandalorian was clearly very impacted by his past, which we'll talk
very much,
more about. Other people are very much aware of like the galaxy is only in the state it is now because of what just happened five years ago. So there's a lot of sense of that. I think my big picture thing is I was sure I was going to like the surface level fun of it's going to look like Star Wars. It's going to sound like Star Wars. It's going to be action figures exploding across the screen in this very specific celebrating the original trilogy way. And I hope that it would have then that other side of Star Wars, which is, but what does it mean? What could a 12-year-old learn from it? What's at stake for the characters, you know? And I was delighted about how much my favorite part of it was just the Mando is a mystery to the world, but we, the audience, in that first episode, learned an absolute ton about the mysterious Mando. He's not just a cool, nameless, unknowable guy who's who kicks ass. He's, in fact, fallible, we see with the Blurg. So it was really cool to see that got all of the surface level aesthetic glory of the sights and the sounds and the action of Star Wars. And I got all of the meats and the bones and the exposed nerves underneath.
Yeah, that's the fuel to Star Wars, right? I mean, that's and Favreau talked about how George stopped by and said, hey, don't forget what Star Wars is about. The 12-year-old thing, speaking to them. And I think that starts it was very clear that that's going to be very present, which is what I want. My one fear basically going into this was it was going to be all action figure fluff. I trust Filoni and Favreau, but I was like, I hope they get it. And they did.
I think the other part of it that I enjoyed from kind of the other perspective is really enjoying that surface level. Like when I watched it again, it was fun to just like see the kind of meaty character moments, but it was just so much fun to just sit back and go, that's a gonk droid. Those are two different designs of land speeders, you know?
You're making me choke on gonk droid humor.
Sorry about your cough.
It's still going. It's just never ending. Just here for it's the Force Center trademark now. Me dying.
Professional talkers are gonna cough. Ken's got some tea. We'll try to
edit some of them.
Navigate the cough and keep it healthy. But anyway, real quick, because I think it informs our talk. This felt to me like a fever dream that a group of Star Wars fans had on the playground in about exactly 1984.
So right.
So much of it was not just like recurring aliens, but a lot of things that, and I think this is for everyone. I'm just talking about the genesis of where it came from, not who can or enjoy it or understand it or anything like that. I'm just talking about, there's so many specific details. Like I remember talking to friends about, hey, isn't it cool when the aliens speak other languages and you get the subtitles? And we really like that. We like that alien feel. We like the broken down. It's hard to get by. Like, you mm-hmm. know, classic shot of the land speeder, just like the way it was framed. The carbon freezing is back. And that's the way a bounty hunter can move around. Like, it's endless. It's endless. The Gonk droid, the Kwakian monkey lizards, updated new interpretation, but honoring what we imagined Boba Fett and IG-88 to be. It's not those characters, but it's back then what they were imagined to be.
Totally.
And now, given their own characters, their own journey, that's all great. But there's just so much about it that was even calling out Life Day.
You know,
The beast right away. Mm. We get this isn't a business world, you know. Or you can't port this to the real world, because in the real world, you know, beasts don't just suddenly erupt. And that's just kind of like, that's one of the things that happens. It's not like, well, I'm a bail bondsman and I got to pick up someone in Burbank. I hope the lizard doesn't burst out of the freeway.
I don't know. Flip over to that Nat Geo tab on Disney Plus, and we'll see what creatures are out in Burbank.
Yeah, and obviously, I know there are beasts in the real world, but you know what I mean. Just getting that spirit.
Yeah,
that's the world. Like, hey, you got to get past some other bounty hunters, and a beast might burst from the ice. Yeah. So much about it was so in that pocket, and it really enjoyed that.
Yeah, the there's always that fine line with references, and you know, just going back. The Rogue One thing. I loved a lot of it in Rogue One. I love walking around going, yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing. And to approach it with cynicism was always confusing to me then, and it was part of the joy of this show now.
Yeah, because I think that's a great way to say it. When we saw all those little side characters, those aliens, when we had action figures but no more stories, that was a specific point of imagination of what if? What if they did? What if we saw them do other things? What if they had other adventures? What if, you know, Garandan isn't just a weird alien? What if he's a species and he's got a flute to call taxis? Like, what if? And this is the what if of that specific time, updated to modern Star Wars canon, and it's for everyone. Comes from that, spot,
yeah, absolutely,
you know.
It's a fun spot to come from.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so those are kind of some overall reactions. Now we're going to dive into some specifics. Let's talk about favorite moments or scenes or just kind of favorite overall thing, what grabbed you the most.
Man, so it was the mysteries created of his past, which, you know, again, not that I expected they wouldn't have some past to the character, but it just was sold. And I think it was taken by a lot of people of just it's a show about bounty hunting. And I always wanted it to be more. I always trusted Wood. And we got that right away. And that sequence with the armorer and going to the little kind of Mando community, so to speak, I guess is what I describe it.
I think they said tribe in the episode.
Tribe.
Mandalorian tribe.
Yeah, to go there and touch upon that. And then, you described it so greatly in our breakdown on Collider, but just that hammer sequence, the flashback, was really nicely done. But then immediately, I'm so curious. His motivations, the Mandalorian's motivations, are more clear, or you have more questions about what brought him to this point. The flashback to him, we're going to say it's him. I think that's a pretty strong leap. There's a chance it's not, but it's him. The revelation of the term foundling, kind of an orphan-like creature within the Mandalorian's creature, human being, Mandalorian. I love that sequence.
Yeah.
That's the one that when I watched it the second time, I couldn't wait to get to. And when I left it, I was like, I hope they do that again in another episode.
Yeah. I think my overall, I got a couple of I really like that line. I like that moment.
Sure.
But my favorite thing is that the Mando is not entirely a mystery to us, in that his journey on a practical level is bounty hunting to get by and to get Beskar for himself, for his community, and clearly to provide for his community, but on a deeper level to deal with his trauma and figure out if he can live up to the legend of being a Mandalorian. That was layered in so strong of everybody. Like, this is not a subtle armor to wear.
No. No.
You know, right in the beginning, he gets teased kind of. Yep. Hey, Mando, you know, from the a-hole in the bar. We get that flick of the knife on the armor, which is what incites the violence. Great storytelling that those two dudes in the bar, two or three dudes, are jerks. So you're on his side.
Yep.
So you're immediately like, I like this guy, and I know there's got to be more going on under the mask. And then to get to see, like, yep, there is. Mm-hmm. He's not telling anybody else, but he's got a community. Yeah. He's got this trauma from his past that is specifically, we assume, why he doesn't like droids.
Yeah.
Because he had a little bit of a bad run-in with them, we assume, in the Clone Wars. And then that he wants something called a signet.
Yeah.
He wants full armor.
Yeah.
Gets motivated by Kuil, the awesome Nick Nolte Ugnaught, to live up to the legend. Yeah. He used to ride Mythosaurus. Mm-hmm. You, if the stories are true, you can take as many dudes out as you need to in an awesome action fight because you're a Mandalorian. Are you a Mandalorian?
Mm-hmm.
Live up to it. You know, that is his story, made him intriguing and likable. Really, I like the Mandalorian.
Really did, because right from that bar fight in the beginning of the nicking of the Mando armor, like you said, it's no secret that he's a Mandalorian. He's not walking into any situation and people are like, and who are you?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, a Mandalorian. Mando, it's a thing. His armor, his value, that, oh, is that real Beskar? Like, everything about it is paying off to the title, where it isn't just, the outlaw.
Yeah.
It is something. And then to find that this depth here, I am... You know, the droid thing, so the first droid comes up with the speeder, no droids. And it's like, it's similar to the Wu-Hare now canon explanation of Wu-Hare not wanting the droids in the cantina.
From a certain point of view book, right?
Correct.
Because he had trauma from...
Separatists, right?
Yeah.
The battle droids and everything. So I'm assuming we're going to get a little more of that flashback, only because what we saw in some of the trailers with super battle droids and everyone was excited about that.
And the droid gunship. It looked like they were assaulting people in the same garb.
Yeah. And they're clearly not on Mandalore or even, Concord Dawn or anything. Looks like they might be out in the galaxy.
Yeah.
Separated from their culture. So I love that is just this pilot episode kept going back to the thesis statement of, This is the Mandalorian, and who is the Mandalorian?
Yeah.
We're going to find out.
Yeah.
I loved how it paid off. I will dive into the Nolte moment. Because it's really deep.
It's really rich. Yeah. And I mean, just he's still, it's the best of both worlds for me. He still comes off mysterious and cool and a badass. But just other things that we learn about him, like not infallible, has a hard time with the Blurgs, needs help. He's willing to work together with IG-11. He is a member of the guild. And this Mandalorian tribe. So he is holding himself to all sorts of different specific codes. He really hates the Empire and won't take their credits, even if that means making less. He makes the choice to be kind to the Blurg, understands that violence is not always the answer to everything. So you start to pile those up and you're like, we actually learned a lot about this character who barely speaks, and we don't get to see his face.
I think it's easy to overlook some of it. And you pointed out it's clear, but it's like, are you paying attention to the moment where Greef Karga says, here's Imperial credits? It's not just, they spend. He clearly says they spend, and he's like, the Empire's over.
Yeah.
I don't want it. We have an issue with it, right?
You get these credits, you got yourself a stew in the language of Carl Weathers.
It's a stew, and he pays him in what, calamari fun, I think is what they say.
Yeah, I tried to write it down, calamari flan, I think.
Like, who doesn't love a good flan after dinner?
I might have missed
half,
that one, yeah.
Like you said, it's half, and so... The fact that he's willing to take that to not have anything to do with the Empire's money, that's a powerful way to start this character's journey.
Yeah. It's
in this post-Empire world where, the Empire, the scattered, I'm barely calling the Stormtroopers. They're the left, they're the worst of the worst.
They look like they had different misadventures because the one has like kind of stained red of like, what planet did you get your ass kicked on?
They looked like they were stained by the sun after you leave your Kenner figures out for too long.
Yeah, like you guys, you're like vinyl in a window.
Yeah.
You're not doing well at all. So that was my big favorite moment. Do you have other big or small favorites?
Favorite moments? The reveal at the end was awesome, but something specific about it. We're gonna break this show up in a fun way, but... I, on second viewing, loved the stuff with Nick Nolte even more. Like, initially it was cool. It was like, okay. Quill was cool, however we're saying his name. It was fun. And it was so, such a Western. We're going to a ranch. We even got a, there's a, like a little, spinning wheel of, windmill out there. And we're learning to ride horses. This is like, this is a scene in Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah, we just want to be left alone on the prairie, and we don't really take to your kind, but if you can make the problems go away, all right.
Do you need to learn how to ride a horse? Here's the training mission to learn it.
Yeah.
and so I was amused by that. But the second viewing is where you start to see the depth, and I thought that was rewarding. And then Nolte himself, the I have spoken line is instantly classic.
I have spoken is I think the moment where I just laughed so much. It's such a great deft writing choice to just give a character that would have had a lot of character anyway.
Yeah,
a ton of character and mystery. Is like, is that just your personal catchphrase, dude?
Yeah.
Or is that we were joking before? Is that what Ugnaught say all the time?
Wilrow Hood's running around. They're like, don't run. I have spoken.
Put 3PO's head in there. I have spoken. But yeah, I have spoken. It's a dangerous one. Yeah. That's going to end or begin a lot of arguments if people start quoting that one too hard.
Those shirts need to be made. I'm sure they're already being made.
I have spoken. Yeah, I'm sure TeePublic is full of I have spoken t-shirts as we speak. just a fun line that I liked. I liked the comedy of the first bounty that was grabbed.
Yes,
I liked that. I liked that it wasn't super violent. I can bring you in cold or warm is another, I think, going to be classic, iconic line. Great counterpoint that he was so chatty. It's because he got a lot of exposition out and really got that contrast of you're not going to get anything from him. He's not going to take his helmet off. He's not going to open up. He's not going to barter. So it's some character showing. But I just thought he was legitimately funny, and including the specificity of the line, I haven't evacuated since the solstice.
And it's
however long that is.
Yeah, Horatio Sands coming in, delivering this character. And it was slightly jarring in a fun way at first. You know, he wasn't speaking Huttese. He was speaking the King's English there. And it was kind of weird at first seeing out of an alien, very alien face.
Yeah.
But then I just, the rhythm of him and the nervous kind of chatter. I was getting home for life day. Guess that's not going to happen.
Not going to see the family. Oh, that's a Rodian and Carbon.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
Carbonite.
I really liked it. And in terms of exposition, like you said, this is, we're leaps and bounds away from Rick Olley at this point.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and also, it hadn't even struck me until we got talking about this person. That we got a different world going on in the bounty hunting world than just a bunch of badass bounty hunters and smugglers fighting back and forth. You get the sense this guy's not a fighter. He wouldn't know his way around the blaster. He finds a bunch of them and shuts the door, right?
Yeah.
This guy is like, I cheated on my taxes, or like I'm a con man, and I always, you know, you've gotten too many free meals at the New Republic, you know, protected restaurant. Who knows? But like, he's not a badass. It gets to some of these ideas of what the galaxy looks like.
Yeah, especially when Greef Karga is going through all the bounties that are available. That, you know, it's played as they're small money, but it's all just tiny little normal things.
It's like, go get them, not like
someone.
It's not everyone is an epic fight between Boba Fett and Bossk. It's you know, real people trying to get through the galaxy, which becomes a big theme. Any other small moments you want to shout out before we dive into some more of the big picture ideas?
I loved IG-11 and the execution of that, and I was very curious of what they were going to do with Taika Waititi. I still believe, you know, the character will go on, but I love the idea that maybe he won't.
Maybe it was the one time.
Maybe that was it.
Yeah.
But I think he'll go on. But that won me over pretty fast.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, the character of comedy and you know, the idea you were talking about of the, you know, it's a murder bot that's really worried about the protocol of murder.
Yeah.
And bounty hunting and the guild stuff that was played really, really well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I loved not just the flipping arms, which was cool as hell, but the flipping eyes to make connection, to make timing, to give IG-11 even more personality, being concerned about not just the money, but the reputation
Yeah.
Like, how much credit am I going to get in terms of reputation for this? And the self-detonation thing was both, it was funny. Mm-hmm. It gave a different kind of tension to the scene. And it was also like, you know, I really like the contrast in Star Wars between the organic and the kind of mechanical or mechanized.
Right.
You know, you got 3PO telling Han the odds, and Han doesn't want to know the odds, and Darth Vader's more machine than man. You know, it pops up a bunch. The Luke turning off his targeting computer, the
right.
organic versus the mechanized in any way. And I liked that IG-11 was a badass. And he's like, well, one thing went wrong. Time to self-destruct.
<I'm done. laughs>
And it's some great comedy and great, like almost like buddy cop moments from the Mando being like, don't do that.
Don't.
And the fact that he goes, well, nope, okay. No, it's going bad again. Got to do it.
Yeah.
It was a good tension raiser and funny.
Can we talk too about, I don't know if this is the best spot to get into it, of I think you and I had both had a similar reaction watching it separately of when it becomes very clear that the Mandalorian's okay with working with a fellow bounty hunter that might be taking the score from him. It was an issue. I had I would just send him out, self-destruct out there, kid. I'm going to get in here and take the job. But it spoke to the Mandalorian character.
Yeah, that he just wants to get the job done. And if that means taking fewer credits, fine. But yeah, I think I had a concern that this show might lean a little bit into the gritty.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was concerned that it might be a character who just says, like, I work alone, you know? And, I mean, it is perfectly gritty. Seconds later, minutes later, he shoots IG-11 in the head, but for a reason.
For a reason.
And a moral reason.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'd like that he was open to, look, this is going to be best for both of us. It's following our rules, our honor.
Yeah. He's clearly got some, some things he's working through, but I was relieved more than I thought I'd be that he wasn't, I'm alone, a rebel. it was a good moment to me. And then, when you and I met up this morning, you brought it up too. And I was like, okay, cool. So I'm not an idiot. I saw that, right? It felt warm. The tendency to write that save the cat moment or save the blurg moment if you're writing Star Wars.
Yeah.
It just was like, okay, he's a functional creature, human being in this world.
Yeah, and it creates this great tension because to everybody, he is this mystery that everybody else has baggage about what it means to be a Mandalorian and who this guy is. And we, the audience, have this secret relationship with him. Where we know more about what's going on behind the mask than the other people he runs into, besides, in theory, the armorer. So all sorts of great stuff. Let's get into some of the big canon stuff, and then we'll talk some of the big theme stuff. So we know that there's going to be a lot in this show that is possibly adding new canon or letting us look at new canon in different ways. So we want that to be a thing that we really highlight and cover. So for our first episode of The Mandalorian Report, we got some juicy canon.
Yeah.
Including a baby Yoda.
Baby Yoda.
In Tarot Bang. A baby Yoda. What?
Tiny Yaddle.
Yeah. So we had heard that there was some big canon revelation in this first episode. And it would appear to be a baby Yoda.
This
a baby Yaddle, if you please. But we have to say that because we famously don't know the name of this mysterious species.
I mean, it could very well have been that Life Day was mentioned and Disney didn't want anyone to know that yet. No, it was a weird, a little behind the scenes stuff, a lot of times for the Collider, Force Center's on those lists now too. Jennifer got to go to the press day. You were invited as well. Like that kind of stuff happens and they'll send out the screeners. And the reason they do, obviously, to get the reviews out right away or early reviews to help promote this. It wasn't, I'm sure Disney felt, people are going to watch Mandalorian regardless, but they were very clear in sending out messages to the press, no advance copies because we don't want to blow the surprise that's forthcoming.
Yeah.
So that was a big thing. That was a big, and I think it delivered on that.
Absolutely.
There could be other bigger moments or returning characters, anything like that. That all could have worked well here, but it was, that's something I didn't know that we'd see in Star Wars again.
Yeah, it was a thing that when it first happened, I thought it was really cool. When I saw that floating there, I admit my mind did go to like, I don't think we're going to see a character. And like, what fits in that?
Oh,
and
right.
And I had like, is that going to be? And then I saw the ears. And then there's noise made from my mouth and my wife's mouth.
Yeah.
In our living room of joy. So I admit I was surprised by it. The more I get to think about it, talk about it, I'm excited about it. I was surprised by it because in my perspective, a lot of this comes from a generation that grew up with the original trilogy. A lot of this is the bounty hunter, the Western, the what if our action figures could walk and talk and kick ass. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is that fantasy. And one of the things from that generation that I have always been exposed to is people liking Yoda being mysterious. When Phantom Menace came out, people of my generation did not like the answers. Mm-hmm. They didn't like knowing more about the midichlorians. There's famous bit about not needing to know. See, Darth Vader is a cute kid.
Yeah.
And there's, in fact, the Yaddle.
Yeah.
We like Yoda being mysterious. Like, why is there just a Lady Yoda? So I was surprised that they were going to go there.
Yeah.
But once that passed, I'm really excited about it.
Yeah. I think those answers will come. Some of those big, we might finally get that species answer. You might get a little bit more because there has to be something more than just the reveal, right? It's this part. Now it's this plot engine, and we talk the Dr. Pershing character is really. I must be alive.
Yeah, and I feel like everybody who watched that is just immediately like, yeah, Dr. Pershing wants to cut open the baby Yoda, right?
Yes,
and try to use midichlorians or just like this species is rare, and Dr. Pershing is actually Doctor is a stage name. I run a circus.
Yeah, it could be something.
Yeah. Who knows?
I like that you were kind of joking to on the other show and off air that maybe they're literally trying to find out the answers themselves to fill out the information for the galaxy.
Yeah, because Yoda and Yaddle would have been known, Yoda in particular, and then that information suppressed when the Empire was around. But older people would certainly know this prominent figure of the Jedi in galactic politics.
I keep calling him now a Yokugel is what I've decided to species.
You think
name
that's
is.
The species? Yokugel?
Yeah, I hope not.
Yeah. Yeah. What if this character's name was just a portmanteau of Yoda and Baby? And it was like, his name is Yabby.
Yabby.
Yabby the Yoda baby. But yeah, we kind of came up with that. It occurred to me when we were talking of they wouldn't necessarily need to reveal if Dr. Pershing wants to know the secrets of this species that the galaxy was only vaguely aware of, or he has some ancient text that claims that they're powerful, or you can, you know, you cut them up and you use their organs and you can live forever. Like, who knows what creepy stuff, or they are force sensitive and you can somehow manipulate them, whatever. And they're almost in Indiana Jones way after the legend of this lost species.
Yeah.
And so they don't ever quite figure out the answers is an interesting possibility to me.
It could be. I mean, this has to be a pretty important and valuable 50-year-old baby, right? Like this isn't just a cute reveal. Like, what is it? I'm so curious.
Yeah.
So is it specific to this one? Is it specific to the race? Is it the species? Is this, and then for him to use it to immediately connect to it, that he's going to shoot his new buddy that he was very clearly willing to work with. But then that hand touch at the end is actually one of my favorite moments. Talk about favorite moments and revelations out of this canon.
Yeah, and they knew that that image is like a painting. Like I would be happy to put that on my wall. It's not just a hand reaching out. It's the way it's framed. There's a shadow from the doorway. It's all beautiful. Well done, production team, designers, Dave Filoni on that. So there's the mystery of what's the story going to be? How much of the mystery of this species is going to be told? You know, people are already making the jokes, which I understand, of did Yoda and Yaddle have a baby and put it to the side? But to me, I feel like it's going to be magical. It's just, I think we talked a long time ago of like, well, what if that species is just like, well, only three are born every 5,000 years, you know, and they just, they grow. They come into who knows, you know, anyway. So there's that mystery side of it, which is fun.
Yeah.
But the part of it that I think the more it sits with me works is because it works with everything that has come before. It's why we got to see the Hammer trauma flashback, so that we know the Mando had a traumatic childhood, that the Mando is doing some of this so he can help provide for the foundlings in his tribe. So then we have a cliffhanger where the Mando needs and wants all that Beskar that he will allegedly get if he completes this. But this is an innocent 50-year-old child, right? And that choice between that, and that's just, that's so great. That's so juicy. It's, you know, to me, like early seasons, really great Battlestar Galactica, where it's really like, which choice would you make? It's not just the choice between right and wrong.
Yeah.
It's, are you willing to hand over this innocent little thing to creepy Dr. Pershing with his lens crafter shades? Or do you get what you need for your community?
Yeah, that's the power in that moment. It immediately raises all those questions. And it's beyond just something as simple as the Mando's found a new, you know, I'm trying to think of the Dan Aykroyd quote from Gross Point Blank, that he's found a newfound respect for life, or he's in love with that guy's daughter.
Yeah.
It isn't just that. It's something that ties to him, this orphan version that we're going to probably learn a little bit more about him.
Yeah.
I thought it was a powerful connection.
Yeah, and I wonder if the Mando's been dreading moments like these. You know, we don't know how long he's been out there bounty hunting, trying to make ends meet. And he's like, I haven't quite ran into a situation where I don't feel like I can complete this task.
It's like my thought is he part of, you know, Clan Red, House Vizsla, whatever it might be, new house, new clan in the Mandalorian culture we're going to learn about. And this, something happens, we know something happened to him in the past, but then the Galactus of War comes in, and maybe, you know, maybe this guy didn't want to be a bounty hunter.
Yeah.
And now has to, and this survive. You talked about the themes of surviving. It's just so much more intriguing to me, and I keep coming back to that. I had the faith, but I gotta tell you, I was slightly dubious going in, because in a lot of the marketing, it was just sold, and a lot of fans' reaction, it was just kind of taken as cowboy walks into town, and I love a Western. But
yeah,
I was craving what this stuff brought, and that Yoda reveal was just cool canon and big emotional point. So I love that.
Yeah. The best of what a Western can be, of, you know,
the
mysterious man with a code. All right. We're going to have lots more opportunities to talk about Yabby, if that is indeed the Yakugel's name. Is that what you called it?
The Yakugel.
The Yabby of the Yakugel species. You heard it here first and probably last. But moving on, I think another big canon discussion, not a revelation yet, but a discussion, is the term Great Purge.
Yes.
So the Armorer says, I'm paraphrasing, I didn't write it down, this was probably procured in the Great Purge.
Yeah.
It referring to the Beskar with the Imperial imprint on it.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously the Empire took this, what is the armor, the money, the symbol, the honor of the Mandalorian people. The
culture, yeah.
And put their own stamp on it.
Mm-hmm.
So for you, Great Purge, I've already seen people online going, oh yeah, they mean the Great Jedi Purge, which is in canon, where we've heard the terms, the words great and purge before. But I felt like it was talking about, maybe it's just because I have this theory, but I felt like it was about a Mandalorian purge of some kind.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side?
helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm on board with your theory, and you've talked about it off air, and I'm glad it's now getting on record. We don't do theories and predictions too much here. It's not how we at 4Center watch Star Wars, but I'm excited with this one because it makes a lot of sense. Werner Herzog talking about restoring the natural order of things and kind of rub. And we talked about that coming out of Celebration, our sneak peak of him going, oh, Beskar, that is Mandalorian. It's got Imperial stuff on it.
Go back to you. I have a lot more of it. Yeah.
Werner That's good. Herzog. And then to now see that, it was just great.
Amazing.
Just great. What did you say? The tracking fob.
Yes.
So great.
The parsec.
But to see that beyond just even that, what we saw and thought coming out of Celebration, but now the Beskar means a lot. It means upgrading his armor to be more Mandalorian or whatever it is, working towards the Signet to help the orphans. All these kind of things tied into this idea that where the hell did the Mandalorians go in the Galactic Civil War? That we see in Rebels, Gar Saxon has taken over. He's working with the Imperials very happily. Good arrangement. They're defeated. Sabine, Bo-Katan gets the Darksaber back. She's in charge again. Yay. And then poof, we don't know anything yet.
We don't know. Yeah. All we know from canon is then shortly after that, right? We get Scarif. We get Jyn Erso and Raddus and Cassian Andor leading the charge. And the war erupts.
Yeah, the war takes off, and none of those really cool Mando warriors that the rebels would certainly want.
None of these incredibly proud, experienced, well armed, famous warriors who have fought Jedi and Sith to a standstill. Like Palpatine's just going to be like, fine,
right?
Right. So it totally makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. You know, you got their war torn world with just the domes, like just something dishonorable. Like I keep going to gas because they're in domes. It just feels dishonorable.
Yeah.
Like who knows? Just headcanon spinning. But I feel like some crackdown from the Empire on Mandalore, so you just have these scattered tribes. And that was the vibe I got from that scene of we've got to do this because we're all that we have left. Maybe there are other satellites. It doesn't seem like they've been wiped from existence because when people are seeing them, they're going, oh, Mando.
Yeah, it isn't like the Jedi of, I heard rumors. And they say, oh, I know who you are. You're still around.
Yeah, so they're still around, but I wonder if there was just some sort of it's not just like other planets where like, we're going to kind of press you into service and we claim we're paying you, but we're actually just totally ravaging your planet for resources and now you're our slaves. Like, you're not going to get away with that with Mandalorians. right?
Not. They're going to fight back.
They're going to fight back.
And they would know that. The Empire would know that.
Yeah.
I absolutely believe that's going to be revealed. That's why when we had locked in some of this earlier, but you were really a couple weeks ago, right? Off air.
Yeah.
Off air, you said at first. And I was like, we've got to get this on record. Not that we're in the
prediction. It'll be totally wrong now.
It could be totally wrong. Yeah. But it why I'm excited about it is just the themes of it.
Yeah. It's because I like it because it heightens the urgency of we need to reclaim our culture because it's almost gone.
Yeah.
It heightens the, I won't take your credits. Me and my people will starve before we'll take your imperial credits. You know, that's great.
Mm.
And his, like, you're talking about, he seems like a guy who can approach a blurg calmly when he knows that's what's needed. He's happy to work together with IG-11 until IG-11 crosses the line. He's ready to lay those stormtroopers out.
Oh,
he's excited.
Ready.
I like those odds. Like, if you get a badass line, I want some like that, you know?
Yeah.
And he's like ready to be like, I actually personally want to blast the hell out of you.
He's not a bad guy to be a bad guy, a badass to be a badass. Yeah, he's it's almost Jedi-like in a way.
Yeah.
Not that he's a Jedi, but just like, I'm ready to fight you guys.
Yeah, I would be happy to fight lousy stormtroopers. Any other thoughts on canon?
I mean, come on, Life Day. We've known some of the elements of Life Day are canon, have been for a while. Just fun to hear it directly mentioned in this show with a lot of people watching.
Yeah, yeah.
Silly billiness, but I like it.
Yeah, yeah. And I like the new. I mean, and I know there's bits and pieces here pulled from Legends and all that, but I like just like, we get this whole system of how bounty hunting works with everybody talking about, where's the bounty puck?
The guild.
Here's my tracking fob. Here's the guild. Bail jumper. Like, that's a real world term, obviously, but but just, it's that great tip of the iceberg feel where you're just like, everybody says these phrases, has these objects that you've never seen before, and they're presented to you like, cool. I had those little kid feelings like, I want a bounty puck.
Yeah.
Can I buy a bounty puck of myself at Galaxy's Edge with my own hologram?
That'd be great.
You know?
A couple years from now, we'll get that.
Yeah, for sure. Tracking fobs.
Tracking fobs.
So yeah, it's some new canon as well. All right, move on to some of the big themes. We've touched on them a lot about what it means to be a Mandalorian, but a little bit a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk a little bit about the idea of nostalgia or being driven by your past. I've talked about that a lot on the main show. That's obviously a huge part of Star Wars.
Yeah.
This is brand new live television show. Has a lot of familiar images, aliens, vehicles, but with a new twist. So, you know, it's dancing around with old and new. But even in this first episode, everyone is affected by the past.
Yeah.
We literally see it as the motivation of the Mandalorian. There's this idea of returning to a natural order, whatever it might be. You know, everybody's reeling from what has happened.
Yeah.
And talking about the Mandalorian as a myth and a legend, right?
Yeah.
Like, I've only heard the stories. You literally wrote something called a Mythosaurus. It's got myth right in the name. So there is that strong presence that to me like evokes the same emotions of that's a name I've not heard in a long time. Your father wanted you to have this when you were old enough.
Yeah.
That it is still about nostalgia in the past. Did you feel that? Did you like that?
Yeah, I love that kind of theme and this idea of, we've talked a lot about reclaiming identity for these characters and some of the characters to come, and the idea that, you think about it now, 5 years after Jedi, things still aren't normal. You had 20 years in the Imperial oppression and reign, things weren't normal. You had the Clone Wars that lasted three, 4 years. Things haven't been normal for a long time.
Yeah,
prior to maybe Attack of the Clones for everybody. And to know that's the case, when Horatio Sanz describes the Resurrect, pre-Empire, right? Like, it's on the minds. The errors are big, and it's still not good. So you're looking back at the past while still trying to go forward, while the New Republic is trying to go forward, and looking around going, things aren't changing. I think I like all of that. In terms of the world building and the state of the galaxy.
Yeah.
The state of the galaxy is looking at the past
and wondering, should we, how far should we get from it? And can we get back to some of it? I like that.
Yeah, what do we want to get back to? Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's a, while having a really, really different spin on it, it's mm-hmm. very classic that the Mandalorian wants to live up to the legends of Mandalorian's past, very much the way Padawans want to live up, Obi-Wan wants to live up to Qui-Gon in Phantom Menace, Luke wants to live up to Anakin, Kylo wants to live up to Vader, you know, and that doesn't have to be limited to those Jedi stories, those lineage stories. This is taking it in making the most of the the canon and legends history of Mandalorians being about honor, you know, and how can I rise to that challenge?
Yeah, and I like then how it, we've talked a lot about it, but how it focuses down on the Mando himself, which I'm going to try to say just Mandalorian. See, Mando would be an insult to him. He doesn't like
hey,
that.
Mando, Mandalorian.
Yeah,
yeah. Another big theme that I really enjoyed that I think cool, the Nick Nolte Ugnaught, one of the things that he has spoken. was that picture that the people who come here just want to live in peace. So I want you to get rid of this problem.
Yeah.
So him saying it kind of unlocked how much in the episode for me, we saw people just trying to get by.
Mm-hmm.
The guy, the character he picks up, Horatio Sands, in the beginning, you don't get the sense he's trying to topple an empire, change anything. He's just trying to get by. That Mandalorian tribe is just trying to get by. The people in the guild are just trying to get by. It kind of keeps popping up again and again where you see people just want to live in peace, which is an interesting theme. And it manages to make the idea of mundane life in a galaxy far, far away exciting. Something to be fought for. These are the people who are impacted when Jedi and Sith fight and put the force in and out of balance. These are the people who are just like, I would like to go home and watch some holovids with my children and look at the sunset. Don't really care about anything else. Gonna get back to day to day.
They don't care about those Game of Thrones. They want a long summer and a good harvest. and this idea of returning to peace is also interesting because I wonder how much it could factor thematically into... You know, we heard that, you can hear a little bit about the origins of the First Order, which we know, I doubt it's going to be a checklist.
No.
It might be referenced, but this idea of the place, the situation, and this justifiable pursuit of peace, but also this, we just want peace because we've gone through 5 years and actually now, like I just said, almost 30 years of problems. So this lends itself to sync up to the idea of, hey, there's an army gathering out there. We just want peace.
Yeah.
We got this peace. Let us have this peace. No, they've got a killer base. Okay.
Yeah.
And that is because it's also about the unrest. I think a lot of it is the unrest and the New Republic trying to find their footing could lead to Moff Gideon's faction and people kind of coming back into power. But I'm interested to see where that kind of thinking too can turn into something later on that's a little more negative, but just like. Because you feel for Nolte that people here just want peace.
Yeah,
just give us peace.
That's all we want. And even getting down to the Mando going, that's not even enough for fuel.
Yeah,
and like to have a main character is just like, hey, I want enough to get by.
Yeah,
and keep my community safe get them what they need. You know.
Yeah,
and it's not like what is my destiny? It's can my ship go?
Yeah.
It's still exciting, but it is about the day-to-day galaxy. So those are some of the big themes that we picked up on, that idea of natural order, too, being like, what does the client, Werner Herzog, mean by that? Everything he says does sound like a little bit of a teasing insult.
It does.
Like, so what does he mean by the natural order?
Yeah.
How that's hanging. Is that, for him, is the natural order just... people getting by and raising their blurgs on their blurg farms? Or is it the Empire should come back? Is it the Mandalorian should go back to war?
Yeah.
What does he mean by the natural order?
He's got a giant...
Flavor Flav sized Imperial insignia hanging all gold in front of him. Like, his natural order might be a little different. Yeah.
Yeah. Does he really?
He does.
Did I was too busy focusing on his fun furry shoulders.
It's right in the center there. It looks like a big clock.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh wow. That's it's a bad miss on my part. Thank you for pointing that out. So we know then what that natural order is. That is the tyranny of the Empire. And I suppose he is surrounded by stormtroopers. So not too mysterious. Let's move on to some other categories of thought. I wanted to talk about each episode, any directorial moments that that jumped out at us, because this has been celebrated so much of having lots of different directors, and directors coming from interesting places and perspectives and more diversity. This one was Dave Filoni, which is, you know, big if you're a Star Wars fan. He's really, I think, first big live action directorial moment. Yeah. So are there moments that popped out for you?
You talked about the sequence of the flashback sequence. I thought it was done really well. I think I really, it's hard to do the fight scenes, and this one, I liked it. They're talking about the one at the end, the with IG-11.
Oh yeah.
Fights should always tell you about the characters and everything, inform the characters, and that one did it very well, and I thought it was very nicely directed by Dave. But the thing overall is the choice I really want to talk even a little bit more about with you, because we mentioned it on the Collider Show, but the idea that we only follow the Mandalorian.
Yeah.
And this is yet to be, and maybe I think this will change, but the choice to make this pilot all, he is in every moment. It's from his point of view. We're not getting Greef Karga talking to someone else after he walks out of the building to learn anything about him. It's all through him and his world.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Yeah. It's all a day in the life of this Mandalorian traveling with him. And I think it gives it it builds your intimacy with the character.
Yeah.
And it gives you a little bit of a tension, too, because, like, oh, okay, we know more about him than we expected. We know more, a little bit more about his interior life, we can infer. Right. But we don't know what's going on around us. So shots like, because of those choices, shots like him just looking through the little kind of telescope version of the binoculars.
Yeah, yeah.
In having a tight close-up of him makes you nervous, because, like, what else is around him? Because we've been limited to his perspective. So that was one of the directorial choices I liked. Of not only are we staying with him, there's a lot of shots that were this wide, flat, like, from far back, like you're shooting a proscenium stage.
Yeah.
It's a thing that David Lynch does a lot, too.
Okay.
Because it's such a just sort of formal and specific way to shoot a scene.
Yeah.
That it gives you a little bit of tension, because you're not used to necessarily seeing it that way.
Right.
So it's kind of wide shots where you know that there's, like, this open expanse, and kind of anything could come from any angle, but it doesn't quite come. And then a lot of close-ups.
Tight shots.
So So it I think it builds a tension and makes you feel a little bit like you are the Mandalorian of, like, just look this way, and it's this beautiful but kind of lonely vista seemingly wherever I go, or else I'm in tight constricted spaces where I could suddenly be surrounded,
jumped,
so I think
ice creatures come I believe
the ice creatures, which was great. That gives it this this feeling of tension that he's in a volatile world and anything could pop up around him. And you're feeling like you are him.
And you're in it. I mean, it's not, I'm not joking or slagging on it. It is like a video game.
It is.
You are, and we're so used to those, you know, we're all getting ready for Fallen Order. You know, I was obsessed and still am with Red Dead Redemption, Red Dead Redemption 2. Like that, that's why we love those games. You're in it. You feel it. And this did have that feeling.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The other thing, what I've been referring to, you mentioned it as your first thing, the hammer and trauma montage.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's so much going on there. So you script that, right, of, okay, well, a good thing is happening to him,
right,
that this armor is being made, but he is remembering that he's also being told, but this is for foundlings. I was a foundling, so it offers your mind to go to, this is a shot of him. But for Star Wars, this is new, just in terms of storytelling choice, right? Mm. We've gotten visions. We've gotten, you know, Rey touching the saber. Mm. We've gotten framing devices and things like Forces of Destiny where Maz is telling you the story. But that very artistic, just the hammer is telling you that this is intense and painful and alarming. And we're just cutting inside his mind.
Yeah.
And the way it just cuts back and forth with his helmet, it's not like he's relating a story. It's not like he's daydreaming. It's because it's with those sharp precision hammer. It's like when I hear a loud noise, I see and feel this. It's like it was like Star Wars PTSD, you know, and it was done in a just visual storytelling style that, well, maybe there's some example of it in Star Wars I'm forgetting, but is very much getting into let's play around with different kinds of storytelling to show his internal world.
The only place where I've seen it at all somewhat similar is in comics with Vader.
Yeah.
And that's totally different medium, obviously. Right. And so it's nice, and I like it. Oh, he's thinking of this, thinking of that. But to see it visually, it really, that again, that's the center of the episode to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
That and Nick Nolte.
Yeah. So great, great directorial choices by Dave Filoni, and I'm looking forward to seeing some more.
Good stuff, Dave.
We talked a lot about an action figure vibe. And then Favreau has confirmed it multiple times, like in the spirit of it, this is me getting out my action figures and playing with this. And I think that he was a child on a shag carpet at some point in his life going, what if Boba Fett and IG-88 found a baby Yoda? And then he grew up, became a great storyteller, and wrote an awesome version of that fits modern canon. But action figures are present. So every episode of The Mandalorian Report, we're going to talk about any action figure inspired moments. Moments that felt like they came from action figures or just made us want to play. For you, Ken, what were your action figure moments?
You know what? I'll tell you, the big fight at the end is where we're probably going to go, and we can break it down specifically. I mean, I don't want to assume to know where you're going to go, but I'll even go to the fight at the beginning, the cold open. Again, when you have a fight, you have a lightsaber fight. What do we learn? What do we learn about the characters? And it did such a great job, everything we talked about, what it meant, and the best guard, everything. But then to see with, you know, a Quarren, some figures you would have had in that collection.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In a bar, very Star Warsy.
Yeah.
So maybe you have the Cantina playset.
Squidface got cut in half. Yeah.
I'll start up there and just say that really worked. It is cowboy walks into bar.
Yeah.
But it played off really well. And, I personally would go, I love breaking down my figure play to small moments. A lot of conversations with the Baroness and Destro trying to figure out what to do about Cobra Commander. Like a lot of those things I've had. So I liked it breaking down. And there's the big fight, but I like that moment at
the time. Yeah, yeah. For me, the big fight, that gun.
The gun
felt like there was that era of Kenner where they're like, hey, can we make up some smaller weapons and radar and stuff? And
that minifig rig all the way through.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think there was also like that dream of if you could have all these aliens, like I've said this before on Force Center, like one thing my brother and I would do is we would come up with a narrative of why there's a fight. We would put our good guys on the floor of our bedroom because they're like walking through a valley. And then we would put all the around our room on dressers and bunk beds, all the villains who are going to be shooting at them.
Yeah.
And then sometimes we would use rubber bands to try to get the good guys to knock the bad guys over. that whole fight had vibe of like, if I could have 50 Nikto action figures.
Yeah.
All set up around, this box from the grocery store that I've set up to look like the building that the Mando's trying to break into. The whole thing had that vibe to me.
Oh, absolutely. And that final fight worked really well. And watching a second time, one of the only slight negatives I have on the show is that some of the costumes looked like costumes to me, but that's nothing. That's not going to hold me back or anything. I just, in watching it the second time, I think I appreciated it more. First time I was like, oh, okay. Looks like a stunt guy in a Nikto costume. Okay.
Yeah.
But guess what? That's what they are.
Yeah.
Same with the blurgs and the CGI. They're not real.
Yeah.
Second time, I really like that fight a lot more.
Yeah. And to me, like, picking it apart is sometimes part of the fun as a fan, right? And I think I noticed one time there was one Nikto, and I think they're Nikto. That's what they look like to me. I haven't got official confirmation. Could be wrong. But there's one that's like, that stunt person was zealous. Like, you fell down real big.
Real
like
big.
You were like Chris Farley break the fake table, fall down. You want attention.
Spaceship down by the river.
The up top moment I thought was very successful in a funny comedy direction to just see the body fall. Yeah. The other action figure moment for me was just like, and maybe this will happen, but just like, I want the Mandalorian Blurg 2-pack.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Want the Mandalorian riding the Blurg. Like, that's such a... I mean, obviously, Definitely. They shot the angles to have the classic Stormtroopers on a dewback look. But, yeah, and the Blurgs are cool. They've appeared in animation. There's a Blurg blaster. There's the Blurg fire drink at Galaxy's Edge.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, there's so much of canon involved with Blurgs that it's fun to see the Blurgs shine.
And I got to imagine, when they're putting this together, that... Favreau, all right, he rides some creatures. What about a dewback? And I bet Filoni goes, I got something better. Gotta imagine that happened.
T-Rex that's all head and no body. So great, great action figure moments. Let's get on to perhaps what I think will be our favorite segment of the Mandalorian Report. Best grizzled weirdo moments.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we both love I Have Spoken, correct?
I Have Spoken is... amazing on so many levels. I'm going to use it around the house. Probably get in trouble. Use it online. I have spoken. It's up there. Yeah.
Yeah.
With some of the all-time best ones in Star Wars.
How did you... there was a great part of the delivery that was not... not being a jerk. It was, you can keep talking, but for me, the conversation is done.
This is why the question you posed of, is this something in Ugnaught culture or something, comes to mind, because it was very mystical in a way. It was very mysterious and accepted as final from the Mandalorian.
Yeah.
He didn't come back with it. Again, doesn't mean that he's like, oh, an Ugnaught. When an Ugnaught says, I have spoken, the conversation's done. Just, it was spoken in a way of a truth. It's a truth.
Yeah.
And I was really intrigued by that. You know, I don't want them to constantly... keep saying it, but it was used, what, three times?
Yeah.
Used, and then used in such a real emotional way at the end.
Yeah.
Because of what he's saying, of this hero's, you know, it's a hero call in a way. I know what you are capable of, not just in violence, but in honor, and that's why I'm helping you.
Right. You're right. There's great emotional variety in it, because there's like, I'm not discussing this with you anymore.
Yeah.
I said what I mean, and then there's the, like, I have... called you to live up to the legend of your people. I have given you the hero's call.
Yeah.
I have spoken. Best of luck.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Walks away.
One of the shots that was, I don't know, I can see it getting pulled out. I can see, hopefully there's already a GIF. I can see it getting memed. You know, when he gives him the great sort of mentorship of like, well, your people rode Mythosaurus. You're not going to try to ride the dumb Blurg. When the Mandalorian manages to do it, there's that shot of Nick Nolte, Ugnaught Cool, doing like a, you got it, head nod. That like, yep, you did it, buddy. Way to ride that Blurg.
We're gonna need a see montage.
That.
Yeah,
I can see the Blurg training montage that's on the floor. I really like that.
Yeah.
Any other grizzled weirdo moments?
I mean, jokes at Werner Herzog. Great stuff. He's in the grizzled weirdo category for sure. We're talking about the lines, but I was really drawn in with about the I'm just being pragmatic part of that conversation. It's as though someone wonders, he's not just a mad villain, you know. He's just like, no, I understand how this world works. I get it, and you know, I understand how it works, which is why I just really like that little moment.
Yeah, that just, I might have, you know, there's a good chance they come in dead, so let's just talk about it ahead of time.
Yeah, let's just plan for it.
Cold and warm is part of the business, so let's just plan for cold, just in case. Yeah. Yeah, and I do like that everything he's saying could be taken as a manipulation.
Yes.
Yeah, because, I mean, your point about having the actual Imperial insignia drives things home, but I even got the feeling that, like, is he playing the Stormtroopers?
Yeah.
Did he just hire these four? You know, is he a long-term Imperial holding on to these are the last of his loyal men, or are these a few people that he just picked up in his, you know?
It's a great question. I don't get the sense that he was like a Grand Admiral.
He just doesn't have that vibe, right? He doesn't have that stiff upper lip, proper British Imperial. He has the, like, I know how to, the second I see everyone, mm-hmm. I like in a video game, I can see the part of you that's weak flashing red.
Yeah.
And I know where to hit.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that was a good grizzled weirdo moment. Not in the category of grizzled weirdo, but should probably mention because it's being discussed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This first episode only had one woman character.
Oh, right. The armor. Yeah.
The armor. I thought she was really cool. I thought it was such a great small touch of the Mandalorian culture mm-hmm. that the person who was, you know, making the armor, who would normally be like, well, in most cultures, like a valued craftsperson.
Yeah, yeah.
But she seemed to be the leader and the sage and the wise one. And that makes so much sense when Beskar mm-hmm. is everything. This is what holds our culture together. So, of course, the person who wields it is the wise one. So I thought that character was great, but I do want to acknowledge that there was some concern, right?
Yeah, we saw it going around online, which means it's worth bringing up. Look, the show, we know the show's going to deliver on a lot more females on and off camera.
Yeah.
But not so much in this episode, and, you know, we're aware of that, I guess. That's
good
starting point for the conversation.
Yeah, and I think if we didn't know that Cara Dune was coming, if we didn't know that there's just kind of, that we've only seen so much of the actual content... that we didn't know Ming-Na Wen was coming, you know, then I think I would definitely be like,
But
since we know that's coming, I'm waiting to see.
Right.
We
understand that's been out there.
Where that all
and
goes.
And why it's out there.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so moving along, predictions for next week or coming weeks. What are you thinking is next?
I think pretty early on, whether it's next week or episode three, we've got to learn the importance of this baby Yaggle. Yaggle. We've got to. I don't mean that like you have to give it to me checklist style, but we got to pick up speed pretty fast here in my mind. And I can't imagine it's just Dr. Pershing and the client that want this. And I really think we're going to get more about that. They got to pay that off. I want them to pay it off right away and have it just raise those stakes immediately.
Yeah. So because I think he's got a choice right then and there.
Yeah.
In it.
Yeah, because we've already got everything I think I need to know until bigger revelations about the Mandalorian. The setup has been done perfect. This episode did well.
Yeah.
I got it. Let's go.
Yeah. I would love in the next episode or the next two just a little more context of what happened to him when he was when he became a foundling, if that does indeed mean orphan, because we've seen in the trailers what we think are separatist droids.
Yeah.
So I want to start putting this character in context of what do the Clone Wars mean to him?
Yeah.
And how did he end up?
Yeah.
What was the perspective? You know, was that on a one of the worlds controlled by Mandalore at the time?
Right.
Was that a group of people who were like, we don't really like your leadership, Satine, so we left a while ago.
Yeah, that's interesting,
you know,
too.
I would like to put his youth in a little bit of galactic history context sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Yeah, getting it out there a little more. Yeah, we're definitely going to go back to that armor. We're going to see more of him. And we clearly know he gets an upgrade of armor along the way, right?
So, oh, yeah, because we've seen that if you've watched any of these things.
It's like, I wonder if that's going to be every episode we have a moment where he goes to more of the flashback and more armor.
That would make it feel even more like a video game, like you're saying. Yes. Like, this is what I got to, after every mission, I got to go back to I got to ride the Blurg back to the central town.
Yeah.
Not that he's going to ride the Blurg through space. Or is he? Prediction.
Set up my campsite outside of Saint Denis.
Yeah, I think in the bar where he is getting the initial assignment from Greef. Greef? Karga? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Greef Karga. Yeah.
Greef Karga. It looked like those Trandoshans that we've seen in many clips were tracking him.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Right? Yeah, definitely.
So I think I'm hoping that we get that cave fight since we've already seen a lot of it. I hope that we get that in the next episode because we didn't see much Mandalorian. Now that we've seen that first episode, there's lots of like, okay, well, where's this coming? When's that coming? Where's that coming? And I want to blow past all that stuff so it can get to be like stuff. Totally like, have no idea what's coming next.
Yeah, and I want Moff Gideon to show up.
Yeah, bring us Moff Gideon.
Yeah,
I'm dying to see that and how it factors into the bigger story, because that's the remnants of the Empire, right? Like what we've been sold. And Moff Gideon has his own, like, does Moff want Baby Yoda? Does yeah. Moff need Baby? Does he know the value of that? Or are they just here to restore some kind of weird order?
Yeah.
I want that story to start right away.
Get us those Death Troopers, too, because if the client, Werner Herzog, maybe his name just should be Werner Herzog in space, Space Werner Herzog, if he is an Imperial or has kind of absconded with some Imperials, it seems like Moff Gideon has his stuff together more.
Yes.
You know, he's got, it looks like he's coming with some Death Troopers who are in.
Yeah, he's got some TIE fighters. He's got some army.
Yeah, so like that'll be really interesting to see if it's in the same planet. Here's another thing to talk about. I meant to do it, I didn't. Look on the data bank. How did you feel about no help with what planets we're on? No, nothing flashing on the screen, no traditional crawl, all that kind of stuff.
It's frustrating in that sense you always mention of when you're a Star Wars fan, you see something new for the first time and you don't know. And you're like, what do I don't know.
I want to memorize.
So that, but after that, even a rewatching it, I was like, okay, we didn't really get that answer and I'm okay with it. Especially the opening planet, I was really intrigued by. It's not just another ice planet. It's something a little different about it. And it's not Hoth 2 or something. So, I'm sure we'll get that stuff. But I think it was okay. I think it was an interesting choice.
Yeah.
Especially for, like, Favreau, who grew up knowing, you know, this is on that planet and this is that planet. And, you know, that's part of the discussion.
Yeah. I think that's great. My final predictions for next week is I think there is a possibility that the Mandalorian just rewires IG-11 in some way. Like, hey, let's get past some of these protocols. Let's get you to forget that I blasted you in the head.
I think there'd be great humor and just like, nope, that's it, it's done. You know, it's just like, nope, you get him for one episode, but nah, they're too good of a team. And he knows he needs him.
Yeah. So what? Final thoughts on predictions. What do you think the Mandalorian does? Do you think he just absconds with the baby? Do you think he goes looking for help? Do you think he tries to pull a fast one and deliver an empty floating bubble and then shoot Werner Herzog in the head?
I think it's maybe a slow burn and that he takes it. I think he stops back at Nick Nolte's hut. I think there's going to be a slow... To me, like, all right, get on. You're getting on out, you know. And then the choices start coming in of what it is. And people coming after him. Or if it's just, I don't know if they, the Trandoshans, are they attacking just because in that fight that we saw in the previews, are they attacking because of the baby? Or just because? I would hope it's connected. Because they're there listening to Greef Karga or
about
watching
this
him.
Job.
Yeah, they're there. So that the job becomes... The engine in which all other things are connected, but that he doesn't start right away. I just want another moment with Nolte's character, which I do believe we're going to get. Just makes sense.
On his way out,
got to pick up his ship a little bit.
And I suppose the Mandalorian has been told that it, in fact, is worth more brought in alive.
Yeah.
But you get that sense of like, okay, I got to deliver this to a bunch of Imperials and creepy Dr. Pershing.
Yeah.
So definitely some concern about Dr. Pershing. All right. We are going to wrap up with just a weird question inspired by the episode. But before we do that, is there anything else that we haven't touched on that you wanted to touch on for this first episode of the Mandalorian Report?
You know, the music, it's been talked about in a lot of places, but Ludwig Göransson has delivered a great score that's different, but has that Star Wars connection, and he talked in a lot of interviews about it. The recorder kind of becoming the instrument that's associated with the Mandalorian himself.
Oh, nice,
really
nice.
Interesting. And the music was very present early on, but second view, and I even appreciated it even more.
Yeah, the quality of the music itself was amazing. It's got that a Western feel, and it's also got a little bit more of like, it's got this sort of not just sort of a driving energy, but it's got an energy that allows for energy and excitement, but also reflects just going about my business.
I'm just
trying to get this done.
Yeah.
Something could spring up. And then when something does, the music either stops like that cut on the Beskar.
Yep.
The music just stops. Yep. Walking down that Mandalorian hall swells when you see the Mandalorian symbol, right?
Yep, yep.
So the music is just, it's very, very different, but very, very powerful.
You get some good blurg riding music.
Great. Oh, yeah, there's a blurg riding theme, right?
Yeah.
I think there is already, you can already buy it.
Or yeah, it's available.
On Spotify.
Yeah, I'm going to check it out.
Okay, yeah, because I gotta do, mundane tasks. I gotta do the dishes to the riding a blurg theme.
Absolutely, as you should. As you should. So that was good. Blurg. Also, like the end credit pictures.
Oh yeah,
reminded me of like an '80s movie at the end where you go to credits and it's like it's a never ending story. Like things are playing. Their love was timeless, and it's just pictures.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a poster sale on those end credits, an offer to buy any of those posters. You know, one thing that we didn't touch on, and then we will wrap up is. That opening crawl or anything,
yeah.
But that new Star Wars graphic,
I love that. Are you talking about the one with all the Kylo
the helmets? Yeah,
ooh,
yeah, right.
Big win.
It was I can't even remember. Yeah, Kylo was in there.
Yeah, yeah.
There's Rebel helmet. Trooper helmet. You know,
I hope that's on everything.
Yeah, right. And it got across the like, look, this covers a lot of characters, a lot of people. Some of them are distinct and specific, like Kylo. Some of them are you don't know which soldier or trooper that is. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really fun. Evocative. Really
it's perfect
iconic.
for Disney Plus, a new era and everything. I hope it plays before a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah. The new intro. The new 20th Century Fox. And I did see that the movies have the 20th Century Fox back apparently.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And we will wait until next week's main show, and we will jump into the great Greedo debacle. McClunky, I think that's what he's...
McClunky, yeah.
I'll have to... McClunky? I don't know. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah.
It sounds like something that a cop would yell at his partner. McClunky! Yeah. That's the grizzled chief. McClunky!
Yeah.
Get in here, McClarkey, whatever it is. All right, we are going to wrap up. As always, we could talk forever, but we are going to get moving. Here, Ken, is the weird question I came up with for this first episode. If you could encounter any other Star Wars species as a cute baby, what species would you want to encounter?
That's a great... Oh, man, that we haven't seen already, right?
Yeah.
I can't answer Porgling or Walkling. I can't even answer a Hutt. I am going to answer a baby Gungan.
Oh, cute.
A Gungan light? A Gungan? A Gungling?
A Gungling.
A Gungling.
Just to see if it trips.
Yeah.
If it spits up.
You know, those big, cute eyes looking at eye stalks.
Yeah.
Oh. Ears not that long.
Oh, yeah. 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 Oh, nice. I was going to go somewhere weird or more exotic. Like back to basics. You know what? A baby Jawa.
Oh.
Speaking of mysterious species, right? Just brown swaddled robes with... creepy glowing eyes.
Yes.
And you bend over like, oh, baby Jawa, and it tries to steal your necklace because it just knows that's how to get by in a harsh environment.
What's wrong with your baby's eyes?
It's wrong. What, do you ever unswaddle your baby? Like, no, we swaddle for life.
We are life swaddlers.
Lifetime swaddlers. Please let us know on Twitter or Facebook or wherever what kind of Star Wars species baby you would like to encounter. I think that's just about it. Ken, we always like to plug the other life adventures we have. Yeah. What do you have going on?
In lieu of watching the show several times, I'm sure I'm going to do, I'll be in Washington, D.C. this weekend, where I'll be watching the second episode while I do comedy out there with Mark Ellis. Go to KenKnapsack.com for more information on that and all the other things I do. And also, I'll be going to the doctor soon to get rid of this cough.
Ken is being an absolute trooper. He is living up to the legend of his legacy of his people fighting through that cough. Yes. Very honorable. Of course, you can find us on all the normal normal places. We're on Twitter is at Force Center Pod. Instagram is at Force Center Pod. You can search for Force Center on Facebook. Our main location for the podcast is on anchor.fm/Force Center. Check us out there. You can, of course, check out our Patreon. That's patreon.com/Force Center. We got some exciting things that come there. We've got all of our merch on TeePublic. Go search for Force Center there as well. And until next time, the next episode of The Mandalorian, we have spoken.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.